The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Simmer, we got some long-term recurring guests on today.
I know. And last time I remember, we had Rishi was in the Alpha building over there last year. Or
that's right. Yeah, but Rishi's been here since we were in Duncan Hall recording this podcast. Okay. Windium has been too. So we've got
old memories.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Before Simmer.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk fertilizers and economics behind that, and nutrient management strategies with the current outlook that we have. So guys, how y'all doing?
Very good. Thank you for inviting us. You know, I feel like the timing is correct. And this is a really important topic that we need to be thinking about and talking about, especially with the situation that we have for fertilizer prices are higher. There will be even more ripple effect that we will see because of the geopolitical tensions that we have between US and Iran, and the repercussions of that on the fuel prices, on the fertilizer prices. And not just this season, but also what are the things that we need to be thinking about in the coming season?
Yeah, yeah. It's a good timing also in a way. We recorded another episode last week, which today is March 27th.
Yeah.
Right. And Arrow's kind of mentioned, that was on corn planting, but I think one of the things he also kind of, not really go too much detail into that, but we did indicate how the crop input, especially fertilizer, is even from last week or 2 weeks or a month, it was like 30-40% higher than that already, and it's kind of trending upwards, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, why don't one of y'all kick us off, but maybe give a little bit of reference on what's going around right now, especially situation-wise, and why we're seeing these spikes in the fertilizer prices and all that.
Yeah, sounds good. So it's good to be talking to all of you today. We've got a lot of unpredictability in the world right now. We're going on a month since the US-Iran war has started. So really the big deal there is in the agricultural realm of things is the Strait of Hormuz. That's where about a third of the fertilizer use in the world comes out of, is transported through, has been blocked. And so, you know, this has been a pretty big blockage in terms of the fertilizer transport. You know, the U.S., we don't necessarily use most of our fertilizer from that region. We produce a lot of it in-house, but that war has affected natural gas markets, which is an input to producing nitrogen fertilizer. So that's part of the reason we've seen such an increase there. And then it's probably going to affect some of our other agricultural competitors that rely really heavily on that region for their fertilizer.
Okay. Let me ask you this, if one of y'all have a top of your mind, how much the price has just changed before this war thing started? Just like you said, it's been about a month now. Yeah. We are into it, right?
Right.
Before and after.
And so the past month we've seen, you know, really it's just affected nitrogen. So potash, phosphate, pretty much the same as they were before. Nitrogen, we're up around 6% in the past month. So we're right around $700 a ton for urea. That's up about $50 a ton from where we were 1 month ago.
So if this kind of drags on long, you know, with that whole blockage and everything, we're expecting this to just keep going higher and higher.
Yeah, I'd expect that to keep going higher. You know, we haven't seen the effects on phosphate and
potash,
but we do import about 20% of our phosphate is from that region. So, you know, short term, we haven't seen much of an effect, but if this keeps going on, it could affect U.S. fertilizer markets in coming years.
And Windium, you study this for a living. I just fill up my truck at the gas pump every couple of weeks. It seems like even once this thing settles out and it's over, which we're assuming it will be over at some point, it's not like it's just going to stop, right?
Yeah.
Like, if things continue to rise or maybe plateau, but they don't just go back to where they were.
No, there's a legacy effect, you know. Whatever damage was done or is going through, we are going through it, you know, it will have that lag effect for quite a bit of time. And who knows how much of that big of that lag effect we are talking about, but it may happen a year, 2 years, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly, especially with fertilizer plants shutting down. You know, it's one thing if, you know, they slow down production or they just can't transport it out of there, and then we're going to resume production, but it's another thing when they stop production altogether. Is that production going to remain ongoing? Same with natural gas. So that could affect global markets for some time to come.
Because I don't know what you have, if you have anything on diesel fuel or, you know, farm fuel. You know, when this first happened, gas prices shot up overnight. And it's like, well, the gas that was below ground at the pump is not impacted by this at all. But they go ahead and react to it immediately because they can.
Yeah, we're up, you know, above $90 a barrel. That's crude oil, so up 40% roughly from the start of this conflict. We're up 50% in terms of diesel. Last I checked, we're at $4.30 a gallon, whereas a month ago we're at $2.84. So that's a pretty big difference.
Wow. Now, Simmer, I've not watched the TV show Landman, but I've seen clips, and I think $90 a barrel is his cutoff of where you don't want it to be. Is that right?
Yep.
That's a bad number.
If you're
for
buying
everybody.
It, that's not what you want.
Yeah.
Heck, even I filled up my truck yesterday. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Full tank, $85. I was like, I haven't seen this number in a long time. So
yeah, I'm like Shaquille O'Neal now. I just put $20 in every now and then, and it's not as much money.
So it's not just the growers. I guess some of us are already feeling a little bit on the gas. On the gas, everybody's feeling it, right?
The growers are feeling it more than we are.
A lot more.
Absolutely.
Lot more.
But,
for them, the profit margin is even, it was going to shrink further. And think about this, like, right now, if the input price is going to increase and if there is not a significant increment in the commodity prices, I mean, we already know the profit margins last year was very tight, and even it's going to drag it further down. So, you know, the food production industry, the farmers themselves would be in tremendous pressure. I mean, they're already in tremendous pressure, and with all this situation, I feel like it's kind of like, I fear like they will be running either at a loss or even at a break-even point.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, especially this isn't our first rodeo when it comes to fertilizer prices increasing. You know, we had the Russia-Ukraine invasion, what was that, 4 years, 3 years ago now, that really shot fertilizer prices up. We've had other ones post-COVID. But I think the biggest thing we've seen is with this one, you know, with Russia-Ukraine, it was a big grain producing region, so we saw fertilizer prices shoot up, but crop prices shoot up as well. So at least they were getting higher revenues to go along with those higher costs. With this one, a lot of uncertainty on the revenue side. You know, there's not much grain that's transported through the strait there, and so, you know, it's really just going to disrupt the inputs. We don't really know what's going to go on the commodity production price side.
You know, when you mentioned COVID in 2020, and there's been a lot of this since that time period, right?
Yeah.
And that's when you got here.
Yep.
So
it's, I started.
I don't know.
I mean,
I got here in 2022. So.
You know, I mean, I was hired before COVID, and we haven't seen the downward trend of fertilizer prices yet.
Yeah.
You know, it has been just going up and up.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to raise prices than the lower of it seems.
Now, one thing, if I understand it correctly, Rishi, for inputs, like when the growers are buying this on a farm, seed and chemicals, they're ordering this ahead, right? Like those orders already would have placed, hopefully, especially for seed, you know, end of last year and all that. And they have probably locked their price and everything and,
you know,
that, right?
I'll be honest, I don't know how that works now that you say it.
It does.
That you,
and that's what I've been told in a way, like you kind of go ahead and place order. You can't, like, you don't want to be a farmer planting, wanting to plant corn next week and thinking about corn seed today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But does it, do you pay for it when you say you want the seed, or do you pay for it when you pick it up?
You lock the price.
You lock the price
when you put your order in, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You deliver 6 months later to me, but if I order seed from you today, I'm locking the price with you today on whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So my understanding is that the seed and the some of the chemistries and all that are kind of handled that way, right? Like how much you want to set. That's how industry is making sure there's enough to kind of meet the demands. Fertilizer, on the other hand, is a little bit more where you, it's because of the retailers and other, you just like, hey, I want you to come and spread this much,
right? It's more of like a current price, isn't it? Like in fertilizer, you don't pay like a upfront price. You have to pay based on the current
price. Whatever's the price at that retail co-op is,
right?
I think they are. That's what it's being
charged. I remember hearing folks talking, I guess, around the Ukraine invasion, and like I heard retailers saying that they could not guarantee a price outside of 3 days. because they had no idea it was that volatile from day to
day. And that's why I said that that's my understanding, because I remember back around COVID times or somewhere else, I know I was in Georgia, we were had a co-op nearby, and they actually were getting some stuff out of Savannah, the port over there, and they had a big load that was got stuck, and he's like, I don't know how much I have to pay to get it over here, so I really can't tell you what you're going to pay today.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
So I think that even makes that even more volatile in a way that you may be a grower A who might pay a price for urea today, but then a week from now that could be another 10% more.
Yeah. And if you are a farmer that has, you know, locked in that price or purchased fertilizer already, you know, it's a lot different than if you're still waiting on that decision. Or like you said, if you've locked in the seed, but you still don't know about the fertilizer, you know, does that affect what you're going to plant? You know, are you going to switch from corn to soybeans, for instance, just with these prices rising so much?
Yeah. And even like, I don't think for a lot of producers store fertilizer quite a bit. You know, they don't have that capacity.
Well, that's why I think the, you know, the retail points, the co-ops have those big bays where it's just, you know, like you, and it also depends on actually, especially some of the stuff I deal with, like when we do soil sampling, all that, and then the, whether you're working with a consultant or a grower making a decision on your farm, you kind of decide on when your what your NPK needs are.
Yeah.
The blend differs, right? And that's why you go and tell, hey, I want this much nitrogen, this much P, and this much K, especially for the pre-plant broadcast, and that's where they mix it at the spot, and then they come and spread it.
Well, I think the way to overcome low prices is high yields with low inputs. Is that true, Wendium?
Yep, math checks
so,
out.
So, Rishi, what do we need to be thinking about on the nutrient input side with this?
Right, right. See, we cannot predict weather upfront, right? You don't know whether it's going to be a dry year or a wet year. You never know what kind of catastrophic events can come. And you have to be always prepared for the unknowns, right? But the things that we can control or think about is how can we utilize the resources at hand and be most efficient, you know, or kind of like be the or optimize it. Like, let's say this year I will pay attention to soil tests, you know, that is my first line of action, right? If you have not been testing your soils for the last 2-3 years and you have been just applying your fertilizer, primarily P and K, based on what you have done without knowing what the fertility levels are in your field, I think this is the year where you have to think back and see, like, do I need to cut some of those P and K this year and then try to be a little bit proactive so that I don't overspend. Right, because you don't know what the market is going to be like.
You know, I think I've talked with some people that a lot of farmers this year, that was an expense they were going to cut out, was paying somebody for soil sampling, and then I guess maybe they could see what was coming, or I don't know. But I talked to a guy like a month ago who was like crazy trying to finish up soil samples because everybody came to him late and was like, "We do want them." And so, you know, hopefully they're able to get results back in time, like you're saying, to apply based on what they actually need.
Right, right, right. I mean, one more thing that I would like to add is the shift from this build-up philosophy to more of a maintenance or crop removal strategy. In the past, because the fertilizers were cheap, you know, there was a tendency to apply a little bit more so that they can build the bank. But in years like this, I think it'll be difficult, you know, to build the bank. I would rather put only that much amount of nutrient that the crop has removed, right? In terms of P and K or even nitrogen. I mean, nitrogen is very mobile. So you have to apply based on the yield goals and all. P and K are typically applied using the soil test. So if you think when you collect your soil samples and if they are running under a high or extremely high condition and there's no recommendations from the lab because they think that there's enough P and K, I feel like in that kind of situation, a simple crop removal approach would be the more conservative approach, and that will give you, you know, or at least you know, like, how much money you are putting and how much you can save. You can cut down some of the costs from that perspective.
Yeah, this is a year where hopefully you can pay off on that banking that you've been doing over the years, right? Yeah. If you have been doing that.
How would you manage that, kind of just thinking out loud, you know, how would you manage that? So I think when fertilizer prices go pretty up, we usually say, well, poultry litter is a pretty good kind of, you know, you can use on your farm and all that, but it has all NPK. Hopefully the growers who have used it on their farms already have these buildup levels. So, like, we usually say, hey, don't do this because you already have this build up, but at the same time, you still need nitrogen and all that, right?
Yeah.
So how do you recommend someone approaching that? Because general tendency in your mind is just like, well, I'm going to go to a little bit cheaper source or a little bit more less expensive source, because, and that's why we say poultry litter is a good, you know, not just for fertilizer, but even building organic matter and a few other things.
Right.
But at the same time, you have done it enough in the past that you have high levels of pee or other.
Right.
So how do you kind of...
So if somebody has been using poultry litter for a while, like less than 10 years, and they have been using litter 2 tons every single year, absolutely with that history of litter, you'll have enough pee in your soil that probably you may not need a full pee rate, right? Because also in poultry litter, more than 50-60% of phosphorus is present in organic form. This means they have to mineralize, break down, and then release. And in poultry litter, the release of nutrients is a little bit slow. I mean, I was mentioning in the field day yesterday that there are two pools of nutrient, or there are two ways poultry litter release nutrient. One is called as fast pool, where it releases pretty quickly within the first 30 days of application. And the second pool is a slow pool, where it releases a small amount in a longer time period, right? So that's why I was saying that if somebody or if a grower has been using chicken litter for the last 10 years, probably they have built up that slow release pool enough that it will serve as a good source or supply for phosphorus to the plants for this year. Now, those folks who have not been using litter for quite a bit, and maybe this is the year when they're thinking, I mean, I have one caution for them. The caution is they should not solely rely on poultry litter for the entire nutrient needs. Mm-hmm. They have to go with an integrated approach, meaning they can apply 2 tons of litter at planting. I mean, typically I recommend 15 to 20 days before planting. But at the same time, they should be applying fertilizer at the... Let's say in corn, we typically do a split application of around more than 60% of the total nitrogen through fertilizer, either urea or UAN. In cotton, we typically recommend that if you are using 2 tons of litter at pre-planting, the best rate for nitrogen at first square is around 50 to 60 units of nitrogen. So that's what people should be observing. I mean, it's going to be an integrated approach. Don't just put... or apply like a single source, basically poultry litter, and assume that poultry litter can provide all the nutrient. I mean, if you're doing that, there might be a yield penalty.
Is the time we're at today in the season, again, it's March 27th where we're talking, people planting corn.
Right.
If somebody has to make a last minute decision, well, fertilizer prices are pretty high, I haven't applied poultry litter on my farm or some of my fields, could they still get it?
I mean, getting poultry litter is a little bit tricky because it is not available all the time. It all depends upon when the grower is cleaning the house. Yeah. But sometimes what people do is they can pile it in their field and keep it. Sometimes they store it for 6 months, 7 months, even 8 months. And then they use it. We have done some work, some research to understand, like, if somebody is storing litter in an open pile for 6 months or 8 months or maybe 1 year, does that pile still retain the original nutrient value?
Mm-hmm.
And what we have found is like, no, I mean, that pile sitting in an open condition where rain is falling, you have high temperatures, you lose nitrogen, you lose phosphorus, you lose potassium. And we have seen like if you store litter in an open field for 1 year, you lose almost 50% of the nitrogen value, 50% of phosphorus, and 50% of roughly around 50% potassium value. So yeah, you have to, I mean, the best thing to do is if you are planning to use litter, I always recommend that you get it tested so that you know exactly what the nutrient content is. And from there you start planning your fertilizer application rates. But don't make any guess. I mean, and the simplest example I will say is like, let's say there's litter whose analysis is 3-3-2, meaning for every ton you're applying, or that litter has 60 pounds of nitrogen, mm-hmm. right? What if that litter, if it was sitting outside and all of a sudden you lost 2% of the nitrogen, right? So now that that particular litter will have only 20 pounds of nitrogen. So there is a big difference between 20 pounds versus 60 pounds, right? So testing litter and knowing exactly what is in the litter is the key here for success.
What are some of the other ways, I guess, going back to this high rising fertilizer prices, what are some of the other ways growers can probably be a little bit more proactive or mitigate some of the effects of that?
One thing that growers should watch for is the pH of the soil, right? If your pH is not in the right range, it doesn't matter how much P and K you apply, you're not going to get the maximum benefit out of it. Because most of the nutrients, especially macro and micronutrient, their availability is much higher when the pH ranges between 6 and 7. So if your pH, if you don't fix your pH, if it's below 5, and even if you're applying full P and K, you might not, I mean, those nutrients might not be available because the pH is low, right? So I think like the first thing that growers should be watching for is, or asking themselves is my pH in the right range? Is it between 6 and 7? And if that's the case, then yes, whatever you apply, mm-hmm. any fertilizer that you're applying or even litter you're applying, you will get the maximum out of it.
Wendium, what's your take on some of this economic kind of climate?
You know, I'll echo what Rishi said again about testing. You know, it's when prices are high, we want to make sure every dollar we're spending is being put to its best use. And so, you know, if we have a soil test, we know what our nutrient requirements are. That potentially allows us to save money on some of our nutrient expenses. I think one of the best things I've seen is, Simmer, your work on like grid testing and mm-hmm. sort of optimal grid size for sort of looking at the amount you might be spending more money on soil testing, but you're saving more on input use, or vice versa, in terms of the ability to really maximize profits at a smaller area. And I think with commodity prices where they are and input prices where they are, that becomes really the best tool at our disposal, is making sure we're efficient.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when Rishi was talking about it, because some of our data showed, and that's why we recommend, you know, I mean, we probably already passed the point of where we should be grid sampling all the time we're in the season. But reason we recommend 2.5 or lower grids is, anytime you go above that grid size, the amount of the fertilizer actually going in the right places, the probability is just so low. Like a good math or a good figure we figure out, like even from our data, was on 5-acre grids, you know, 50% of your fertilizer is actually going in the right place, 50% is actually not. And most of the time it was over applications. Right. Over applications yeah. relates to
yeah.
you're putting a lot more out there, you know, and that translates to more cost and everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, rather take and spend that money on more on soil sampling and understanding what actually needs to be applied in the field than cutting corners on the soil sampling but applying more.
Definitely.
You know? Yeah, yeah. So,
but one thing that I would like to point and tell growers is, this is not the year to try some of these so-called bug in a jug and unlocking the nutrients from the soil. You know, I mean, there's a lot of products that are being sold in the market where they say, like, it's going to unlock the nutrients and make it more available, or I'm selling you a bug that can fix 40 pounds of nitrogen.
But, Rishi, it's only $2.
Hey.
Per acre.
But,
per acre.
But I'll tell you that you don't get nothing, or you don't get something out of nothing, right? These bug in a jug, they don't contain nitrogen or phosphorus or potassium. Or even if they contain, they might be like in a very small amount. I mean, if corn needs 200 units of nitrogen, at the end of the day, you have to provide 200 units of nitrogen.
You know,
you cannot defeat the law of mass, right? If somebody needs 2,000 calories to stay healthy, you have to eat to get 2,000 calories of food.
The you're making a great point in a way. This year, we might see some of these companies pushing some of these products harder, right?
Absolutely.
Because of the nitrogen prices being higher, and they're like, well, whether that's a nitrogen fixer or some sort of
phosphorus solubilizer.
Yeah,
you know, I have heard a lot of.
They're like, well, you can actually offset by doing or putting this in the furrow with it. But I don't know. I'm not a soil fertility, or that's why we have you on there. But I don't think we have seen really, really any reliable data,
right?
That really shows that the yield impact is like huge or something.
No. Even if let's say somebody asked me to spend $2 on these products, I'll use that to buy my fertilizer rather than spending on these unlike products that have no like true scientific reliability. I mean, if there is like scientific data that truly shows that, yeah, I mean, it can replace fertilizer. But again, from a scientific standpoint, as I mentioned, like if the plants need 200 units of nitrogen to produce 250 bushels of corn, you need to provide 200 units of nitrogen. Mm-hmm. There's no way that a small, tiny microbe can synthesize 200 units of nitrogen for your plant. I mean, it's simple. I mean, simple math.
Kind of along the lines you're saying, Simmer, in the big scheme of trying stuff, is it's like my wife. She spends $5 here, $8 there, and she's not spending much money. It's like at the end of the week, you spend $150. That's a lot of money.
Right.
And so we could do that with just, well, it's only $1.50. This one's only $2. And next thing you know, you've added $30
absolutely
to your bottom line trying this stuff at the end of the year. And that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I think Rish has made a good point on, like, especially this year, it's not time to try new stuff.
Absolutely.
You know,
only
use what you know works, kind of. Like, put your money more towards that, I guess.
Yeah, that's been the story of my career, I feel like. Right? We've had, like, one or two good price years since we've been here, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's pretty much the message has always been that.
Maybe we can again say something, but I feel the same, right? As a faculty, I've been like, this is probably fifth or sixth year, you know, like, I don't think we have had a normal year. We're like, hey, this is the year you go do whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
no,
this is
every
this
year
is my seventh
like,
crop.
Yeah.
Seventh crop in Alabama, and I've still not said, yeah, why don't you try it out?
Yeah. It's like, they were like, oh, yeah, the prices are really good this year. Just go ahead and try whatever you want to do. You know, like, every year it's just like, well, don't do this, don't do that, you know.
We did get up to $1 in 22, 23.
Cotton?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was close to even $1.10 or
$1.20. Yeah, it was $1.25.
Didn't stay long.
It didn't stay long, and I think for our careers, you know, that was like the first – 1 or 2 years we were around, so we didn't, at least I didn't know enough to really know that this would be so unusual. When we had corn prices that were good, soybean prices were good that year too, and you know, it's been about 5 years now since they've been
if you know off the top of your head, what are our break-even prices right now for our major crops?
Cotton, I can say, is, well, you know, always depends on yield.
Yeah, just right say 1,000 pounds.
So if we're 2-bell cotton, I'd say we'd be right around 90 cents to a dollar break even. Corn, if we're right around the average 140 bushel per acre recent values we've gotten, we're probably around $4.80 a bushel. Mm-hmm. Soybeans were a little bit over $10 a bushel for the 2026 year. So we're a lot of those, we're not, the prices we're looking at aren't coming close to those values. Maybe a little bit more optimistic on the corn and soybean side, just given the past month of prices, but for cotton, we're still a ways off.
Which, I don't understand all of the government assistance things that are out there, but in talking with people in the last 6 weeks, I think cotton is looking a little bit more attractive than we thought it was because of some of that assistance stuff.
Just yesterday we were in Senator, Alabama, talking to McMeekins, and I think they were, both of them, they kind of told me like some of the stuff has actually come through, so that has helped them a lot making some decisions for this year, right? So I think some of those payments are actually coming through, and hopefully that's kind of showing growers some good, maybe a light at
least a reason to plant.
Reason to like plant, go back more into cotton this year, or like you said, I don't know, it might all change and we may end up having more cotton, you know, than anticipated.
It's, you know, it's, there's so much uncertainty now. We're talking about fertilizer that, you know, isn't necessarily fertilizer disruptions that aren't necessarily directly impacting the U.S., at least in the short term, but it's indirectly impacting us through higher prices, but it might directly impact some of our competitor nations. So like India, Brazil, and Australia are fairly large cotton and corn producers, and they source most of their fertilizer from the Middle East. So they're probably more likely to be directly impacted in the short run. So, you know, we never know what's going to happen to commodity prices. So, you know, hopefully we're in a position to capitalize if we do get those spikes in prices later this year.
Yeah, and that's where like the profit margin's gonna be even more tighter. Like, what if there's no increase in commodity price, but you spend more money in your inputs? So, you know, your margins would be rather thin, or you might be even below the break-even point.
All right, good discussion. We are right about at time.
All right, well,
yeah, last
we're going to cut this part out, I guess.
No.
Leave it going?
Yeah.
Hey, leave it going.
Yeah. Well, any last minute kind of...
I mean, one thing that I would like to mention is, you know, this is the time when farmers should be thinking about the 4R nutrient stewardship, which is thinking about the right source at the right time and right rate and right method of application. When it comes to right source, think about an integrated approach. Don't just rely on poultry litter, but use fertilizer as well. Right rate, just calibrate your rates based on the realistic yield goals. If you are making 200 bushels, make sure that you are only applying fertilizer that will make you 200 bushels. Don't apply like a high yielding corn where they need 300 units of nitrogen and then you are shooting for 300. So just you need to be watching the rate. And then the next is the timing of application. You know, we always think about should we put everything up front, should we split? And the best strategy is to split the applications because that's where you get the maximum buck for the bank. And finally, the right method, right? I mean, we typically broadcast a lot of fertilizer, but maybe this is the year when we think about banding or even incorporation, you know, whatever it works best for each farm, because every farm is different, their equipments are different. But keeping that 4R principles in mind will definitely help to get the maximum out of whatever the resources are at the disposal right now.
Yep, you know, I'll echo that. I think we don't have control over our output prices necessarily. I mean, always good to have a marketing plan, but we can't control what those prices are going to be. But, you know, what we can do on the input side is control those costs as much as possible and make sure we're, you know, putting our dollars where they're best spent.
Mm-hmm. All right, Scott.
I was just looking. I was going to say, Wendy, we're up to 69 cents, I guess, right now on cotton. So that's that's a positive trend anyway, I think.
Up a couple cents,
But, you know, when that number starts creeping up, start booking a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Don't book everything, but
but
don't get too greedy. If it gets up to 75 cents,
book a
some.
Bit,
yeah,
you know,
see, because it might go right back down. You never know.
Yeah, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't rely on, you know, harvest prices for, you know, matter what your crop is, you know, corn, soybeans,
that's right,
cotton.
Yeah.
I think just have a good plan where you book sequentially throughout the growing season. When you hear news that prices shoot up, maybe a good time to book a little bit at that time? Because you don't know how long that's going
to
stay around.
You know, it's just stuck with me forever. Whenever that year cotton got up to $1.20, I remember vividly on the phone with the grower. I was at the Wiregrass station in Headland, and we were talking, and he was on the fence about whether or not to spray. And I said, well, you think about insects eating money instead of eating cotton, and that cotton's worth a lot more money right now than it was last year. He said, well, it was worth a lot more money. I said, what do you mean? It was $1.20 like last week. He said, I didn't book any of it. And yeah. I was like, oh, dang.
Yeah.
And so that has always stuck with me, that if you start seeing something, like, you got to pull a trigger at some point, right?
Yeah. You do. And I had a similar story that year. I had a farmer in Evergreen. I gave a presentation. Prices were up about 5 cents compared to where they were the week before. He was kicking himself because he booked. You know, he missed out on 5 cents of gains, but a week later they were down about 15 cents. So, you know, in the long run, he did all right by locking in. So,
yeah. So it's, what's that saying about what is cotton? And it goes for everything, but some people say the price will go up. Some think it'll go down, and I agree with them. And so yeah. with all these commodity things, you just, at a certain point, you just got to make the best decision you can and pray for the best.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, enjoyed your time. Enjoyed the conversation. Good information for folks out there. And always, Simmer, we appreciate our listeners that listen in on our conversations. And if there's anything we need to talk about, please reach out and let us know. And we'll be back with another episode soon.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.